जय हर माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन बाल गिरी बन द्वारे सूरनंदन ब्रज जन राम जन्ना सूरनंदन ब्रज जन राम जन्ना यमुना चिरावन चारे
राधा श्याम सुंदर गोपा गोपीनाथ श्याम सुंदर गोवरण की जय ग्रंथ राज श्रीमद भगवथाम की जय श्री पांडवी की जय गौरभिमनंदी ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam today, first canto, chapter 13, text number 56, winding up this chapter. Dvasta maya guno darko Niruddha Karanashaya Nivartaita Kilahara Astistano Ivachala Dasyantara Hyomai Babu Sanyasta Kila Kamana Vasta maya gunardarko Niruddha karanashaya Nivarti tarkilahara Asti stano hivachala Dasyantara hyunatmai vabu Sanyasa Kila Kamana. Please chant.
Thank you.
Vaska, being destroyed. Maya guna, Maya guna, the modes of material nature. Udarkam, after effects. Nirudha, being suspended. Karana ashavan, the senses and the mind. Nivayarina, stopped. Akila, all. Aharam, food for the senses. Aste, is sitting. Interesting. Sinanun, I apologize, my print on these word for words is not very clear. Immovable. Iva, like. Achalan, fixed. Tasya, his. Antaravan, hindrances. Ma eva, never like that. Abun, be. Sannyasa, renounced. Akila, all sorts. Karmanam, material duties. He will have to suspend all the actions of the senses, even from the outside, and will have to be impervious to interactions of the senses, which are influenced by the modes of material nature. After renouncing all material duties, he must become immovably established beyond all sources of hindrances on the path. Full quote by Srila Prabhupada. Dhritarashtra had attained, by the yogic process, the stage of negation of all sorts of material reaction. The effects of the material modes of nature draw the victim to indefatigable desires of enjoying matter. But one can escape such false enjoyment by the yogic process. Every sense is always busy in searching for its food, and thus the conditioned soul is assaulted from all sides and has no chance to become steady in any pursuit. Maharaj Yudhishthira was advised by Narada not to disturb his uncle by attempting to bring him back home. He was now beyond the attraction of anything material. The material modes of nature, the gunas, have their different modes of activities, but above the material modes of nature is a spiritual mode, which is absolute. Nirguna means without reaction. The spiritual mode and its effect are identical. Therefore, the spiritual quality is distinguished from its material counterpart by the word nirguna. After complete suspension of the material modes of nature, one is admitted to the spiritual sphere, and action dictated by the spiritual modes is called devotional service, or bhakti. Bhakti is therefore nirguna, attained by direct contact with the Absolute. Om Jnana Tamaram Dasya Janan Jana Shalakaya Chaksuhum Vitamina Tasma Sri Guru Guru Maha Mukam Kuruti Vachalam Pandum Jayati Girim Yakripata Maham Bande Shri Guru Nidina Tari Vancha Kapatu Vipascha Kripa Sindhu Bahe Vacha Vatitanam Pavi Vigil Vaishnavi Girim Maha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasati Tauri Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. My only constant companion, my only friend, my guru, my wealth, that which has delivered me, my great fortune, and the source of my good luck, the form through which I taste pleasure, my obeisance is unto you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. Pretty interesting, this verse on this day. It's, anyway, we'll see. So here we have Narada Muni. Narada Muni is an interesting personality. And he's like right in the center of everything. Anything that's going on, any activity that's happening, any pushing or stirring up or whatever, Narada is right there. And of course here he is at the time of need of the Pandavas. So he's continuing his instructions to Maharaj Yudhishthira. It's interesting to take note of Maharaj Yudhishthira's state of mind. He's just won the kingdom through this horrific, for lack of a better word, battle of Kurukshetra, in which, you know, millions of people were killed. He spent much of the previous chapters lamenting this action and chastising himself for accepting the kingdom in these kind of circumstances. He's faced with the passing of the beloved grandsire and his benefactor, Bhishma Dev, and now he's having to come to terms with the departure from home and the ultimate dying of his uncle Dhritarashtra and his aunt Gandhari. And we sometimes think so we have it hard in life. So many difficulties in there, but His good fortune is that he has amazing association. The association of personalities like Grandfather Bhishma, of Vidura, of Narada Muni. You know, in this way, he overcomes all these obstacles for the sake of doing what his service is. Now, this is a theme carried through from the battle itself. Of course, we're all very familiar. Arjuna didn't want to do his duty. He was overcome with so many difficulties and feelings and mental obstacles and emotions. And Krishna instructed him properly. And through that instruction, he was able to continue on and do his service. In the same way here, by this good association and by this guidance that Yudhishthira Maharaj receives, he's able to overcome all of these hesitancies that he has in the execution of his devotional service. Which is actually very exemplary for us, because we go through life and we have so many hesitancies in our service, you know. So many, you know, just we're not sure what to do, or, you know, we're afraid of what to do, or we don't want to do what we have to do. But by keeping in association with devotees, by reading Srila Prabhupada's books, by hearing regularly from Srila Prabhupada, by keeping good association, we get the strength to overcome these difficulties and execute our service as it is. Now, that service may change, but the ultimate point of that service is, as this final line of the purport is bhakti, is devotion to the Supreme. So it may manifest in one form or another. We may be a book distributor, we may be a pujari, we may be a cook, we may be a manager, we may be a mother, a father, a working stiff, whatever it is that we're doing. If we keep devotional service in the center of our consciousness by that, then whatever difficulties we overcome in those transitions, we'll be able to move forward in a devotional state of mind. And this is the whole principle of bhakti. This is the whole principle of devotional service. To get a very practical, as Narada is giving here, a very practical explanation of what's going on and how to approach it. Now, Narada, speaking of being practical, Narada is giving a very practical explanation in these handful of verses here of what Dhritarashtra is going through as he progresses through this yogic process. In our modern times, of course, we're all very familiar with all of the, you know, almost laughable attempts at yoga and their interpretations of it. I saw something the other day, goat yoga. This new thing, goat yoga, where you do yoga with goats and they climb on you while you're doing the different, I mean, you know, give me a break. You know, I mean, come on. Let's just go back to beer yoga. At least that had me on. All of these different things, these mental concoctions. But here, Narada is not leaving any doubt. Narada is making it very clear what Dhritarashtra is going through and what the process will involve. In this sense, it's almost like suicide, but it's of a highly spiritual matter, not with angst and distress and anxiety, but with a clear understanding that I no longer need this body. I have attained a spiritual state of being that does not require this physical vehicle anymore. And of course, ultimately, all of us are going to come to that state, but coming to that by our own desire of advancement and detaching ourselves is a whole other process here. He's giving up his old and decrepit body. As Vidura has described, he's become like a dog at the table of his enemies. So he's giving all of that up because it's no longer of any use to him. And by the instructions of his brother Vidura, he's able to process through this and come out with a spiritual perspective. Here again, the importance of good association. I mean, there's nothing that can be said too little about the importance of association, good association with devotees. Now, we should make note that this process Narada is describing is very, very difficult. It's not an easy process, and it rarely brings success. It requires certain qualifications that none of us in this day and age have. It requires executing it in places that are very difficult to get to. It's a great challenge to complete this particular process of yogic perfection being described here. And one of the reasons why is very clearly indicated in these, there's certain words here in the Sanskrit word for word that I noted. And here again, for some reason the Sanskrit word's all printed out in blue and my blue ink is not very good, so give me just a moment here. Yes. Dvasta. Being destroyed. Niranda. Being suspended. And Nirvarta. Being stopped. So these three things are essential for this process of yoga. But what is it that's being destroyed? What is it that's being suspended? And what is it that's being stopped? Karna Ashavan, the senses and the mind. So the senses and the mind, in order to make perfection in this process of yoga, have to be destroyed, suspended, and stopped. And why is that? Because antaravan, they're hindrances. They're hindrances in perfecting one's attempts in this process of yoga. So it's very clear. Dhritarashtra understands it through the instructions he's giving. Not by his own conclusion did he arrive at this understanding, but through the hard-hitting words of Vidura. The Prabhupada says many times, this is one of the meanings of sadhu, one who cuts. So Vidura came into the situation. Dhritarashtra was comfortably living out his final days in this awkward situation, and with very hard-hitting words, like only a brother can do, you know? And just really, as we like to say in ISKCON, gave him the sauce. And Dhritarashtra understood it. He appreciated this, and so he went with Vidura, and they departed. And of course, Bindari, being the most chaste wife, went with him. And he went, and he practiced this suspension and stopping and destroying these hindrances, his devotional service, to get free from karmanam, from his material duties. He was identifying with these material duties at the cost of his spiritual life. This is something we see sometimes, that, oh, I have so many responsibilities to do, I have this, I have that, I can't really take part in devotional practices. I can't do anything spiritual. I have too many other obligations. Prabhupada noted this many times in his lectures. So this is the action that Dhritarashtra has taken. So these three, Dhritarashtra, Gandhari, and Vidura, they've gone to the Himalayan mountains to perform these austerities away from the city. Now, the particular place mentioned that they've gone, it's a few verses back it mentions it, it's just near Haridwar. Not the Haridwar we know now, which is just a huge, bustling city, but very quiet, remote place, and of course not very developed. And there, they practice this because they were free from all the impulses of being in the middle of the city. This is one of the things that's very difficult about developing this process, is being within an area or residence where these senses will constantly be bombarded. It reminds me when Srila Prabhupada was staying in New York in 1976. Those of you that are familiar with the 55th Street Temple, I lived there for some time. The 55th Street Temple was on 55th Street. 54th Street, the next block over, was the local fire station and garbage truck depot. So between the two, the noise could just be unreal. And of course, being New York City, the sirens are going all night long sometimes. Such a noisy environment. The next morning, Harisari came into Prabhupada's room and more or less apologized on behalf of the entire city of New York. And I'm so sorry, Srila Prabhupada, for all the disturbances you had to experience all night from all the noise. Prabhupada smiled and said, no, I'm a New York boy. It's not a problem. So in rare situations, yes, one can, you know, for the sake of others, take on these things. But generally speaking, when developing this process of yoga, when restraining the senses, when going internal, one would go to the mountains where there was no disturbances. No, what is that word here? Food for the senses. Food for the senses. Yes, no food for the senses today. So, Prabhupada tells that, you know, the senses are always very, very active, very eager for satisfaction, as it says here, looking for the food of that sense and thus assaulting the soul. If someone gets assaulted, you feel very badly for them. They've been attacked, they've been harmed, possibly beat up, you know, something of that nature. So this is what's happening to the soul by the senses every day. It's being assaulted in this way. And Prabhupada gives a very famous example of this, how each one of the senses is highlighted in different species. For instance, he points out about the tongue, the sense of taste. He describes the fish. He says the fish are living in the ocean, and they have sufficient food. Everything is there in the ocean. Krishna has provided everything for them. But when the hook comes down with that fancy little tackle on it, sometimes they put worms or different types of bait. Sometimes they develop these fancy, I work with guys that tell me all about these things they've made. And you know, all these, they look like they're moving and all, and the fish thinks, oh, this is new. I bet this is very tasty. And so it goes and eats it and gets caught on the hook and loses its life. So just for the sake of satisfying the tongue, of seeking new taste buds. And then Prabhupada tells about the sense of smell, the nose. Says how the bees, you know, they're very happy to go from flower to flower. Of course, this example is used in the spiritual sense as Madhukari, one who goes place to place for begging their alms, like a flower. So this flower, the bee, like a bee, so this bee is going flower to flower, and some of these flowers they open and close. So it goes into them, and for the sake of satisfying that smell, getting that pollen, the flower closes in on the evening and they're finished. They suffocate, they lose their life, and because of the desire to satisfy the smell, they're finished. Prabhupada gives a very nice example on sex life, with the genitals. And for this he uses the elephant. It's nice how Prabhupada was there. You know how they captured the elephant? He would speak to us as if, well, you don't know these things, so I'll tell you. And he says, the elephant's such a big, powerful, huge animal. Yet that independence that it experiences being so big like that is reduced by sex life. He says that when the elephant goes into heat, they capture a female elephant and stake it to a stake and tie it there, and then dig a big pit in front and cover it. And then when the male elephant comes to join with the female elephant, falls into the pit and he's captured. And that's got allegorical sides to it on so many fronts. And then Prabhupada speaks about the sense of hearing, our ears. And for that he describes the deer. How the hunter will play the flute and the deer stops. Oh, that's very nice. And because the deer stops moving, then he can be killed by the hunter. So losing their life for the sense of the hearing. And then Prabhupada uses for the sight, for eyes, he speaks about the insects. We've all experienced this. You have a light on at night, especially in the summer. You come in the morning and there's thousands of dead bugs on the ground underneath. Because they've all come for that light to satisfy their sense of sight. And they come into the hot light and they're burned and they die. Or into the fire either way. So Prabhupada describes these five. He says, but as human beings, we're so much worse off because all of our senses are equally active. The bee, the sense of smell, is active. The deer, the sense of hearing. So on like that. But with the human being, all of the senses are very active and always dragging us in so many directions. So this is why it is so important, this function of controlling the senses. This is why it's the foundation of progressing in any type of yoga, including bhakti yoga. We shouldn't think that, well, we're not doing astanga yoga, so I don't have to worry about, you know, sitting in a posture and meditating and withdrawing it. No, we have to do that even in bhakti yoga because the senses are constantly bombarded for satisfaction. This is actually when our human life begins, when we make this effort to control the senses, to ask about something more than just satisfying the senses. If we inquire about these higher truths, this is the beginning of our human life. And if we instead simply take our time chasing after all of these senses, running this way and that way, trying to satisfy them, then we can't make any progress spiritually. And this includes in the process of bhakti. Prabhupada says that as a devotee, one has certain restrictions. He gives us the regulative principles. He gives us guidance on eating. One should not eat too much or eat too little. You know, I don't know how you can have too much or too little in the way of glutamins. Why not? You have too little. But still, things like this, we have to be very careful. We're not Madhu Mangal. We can't eat unlimited sweets. 100,000 ladus. 100,000 ladus. And he was still thinking, are there any more? So we're not Madhu Mangal. We can't do this. So we have to keep our senses controlled. So this is interesting that this verse and this subject of controlling the senses falls on this day, Pandava Nirjala Ekadasi. We all know the basics of Pandava Nirjala Ekadasi, but there are some interesting things that I can share about this. Of course, here it's, you know, we're getting a reasonable day today. I mean, it's been in the high 90s for some days, but we're getting a reasonable day. If we looked out west, it's 110, 115, 120. And in India, this is a very hot time of the year. So if one can, during this hot season, perform this Nirjal Ekadasi, this abstinence from food, and without any water even, this is considered to be a great, great feat. Actually, it says that on this day, one can only take Charanamrita and Achman. Now, I remember back in New York when we had the Shalagram Srila worship going on there in a very grand way, and we would bathe the deities with four Panchamrita every day. And we had the proportions down to a science. And every day there would be one quart, oh, Prabhu, it's Charanamrita. The entire quart. So that's not what's mentioned here. It says here that when taking Charanamrita and Achman on Nirjal, 3 drops only, actually says something very, very heavy. It says that if one takes more than that, one might as well have drunk wine. So this is not, oh good, I get to say Achman. Oh, I got to read the book, I'll say Achman. Oh, I got to say Magadhyaya, I'll say Achman. Oh, I'm walking in the jungle, I'll say. The idea here is to also, in this regards, for this necessary function, to keep it very simplified. Vyasadeva gives some very practical instructions speaking to Bhima. He says, oh my dear son, Lord Keshava, who holds the club, the disc, the conch, and the lotus flower in his hand, has personally told me all the merit one achieves by fasting on any Ekadasi in the year can be obtained by fasting completely on this one Ekadasi called Nirjal Ekadasi. Please know of this there is no doubt. He continues, anyone who does not fast on this particular Ekadasi called Nirjal Ekadasi should be understood, well, I'll just synopsis these very heavy words, to be in a very difficult situation. Actually, it's the words of Vyasadeva. How can I regret not saying them? Should understand to be sinful, corrupted, and a suicidal person on the spiritual path. So, the story is related how this came to be brought to our attention, that Bhishma Dev, of course we know he's the younger brother of Maharaj Yudhishthira, and he once asked Vyasadeva, he said, if it's actually possible to go back to the spiritual world without observing Ekadasi. And Bhishma Dev explained why he's asking. He says, oh, greatly intelligent and learned grandfather of mine, my brother Yudhishthira, my dear mother Kunti, my beloved wife Draupadi, as well as Arjuna, Nakula, and Sahadeva, all fast completely on each Ekadasi and strictly follow all the rules and guidelines and regulative injunctions of that sacred day. Being very religious, they always tell me I should also fast. But, oh my grandfather, I tell them I cannot live without eating. Because I am the son of Vayu, Samana Prana, the digestive air in my body is always unbearable and hungry. Now, those of you that are familiar with the Annapurshana, the grain ceremony, during the grain ceremony for the child, the 5 life airs are addressed because it's understood that the spirit soul is residing in the body on these 5 life airs. And so there's an offering made to each of these 5 life airs to strengthen the platform that the child is residing on in that spiritual sense. So this is one of them, the Samana Prana. So Bhishma Dev is saying, Bhima Dev is saying, I can widely give in charity. I can worship Lord Keshava properly with all times of upacharas, but I cannot fast on Ekadasi. So please tell me, how am I going to get any spiritual results without fasting? So Vyasadeva understands what he's saying. He says, if you want to go to the heavenly planets, if you want to avoid the hellish planets, you indeed have to fast on both Ekadasis in the month. Bhima practically crying. Oh, my great, saintly, intelligent grandfather. He's giving me very flowery words because he wants a result here. Oh, my great, saintly, intelligent grandfather, please listen to my plea. You are the greatest of Munis. Since I cannot live if I only eat once in a day, how can I possibly live if I fast completely? Within my stomach burns a special fire called Vrika, and it is the unsatisfying fire of digestion. So then it's explained that Agni is divided into 3 different types of fire, and one of these is the fire of digestion. And that this particular fire of digestion burning in the stomach of Bhima is just off the charts.
He continues. He says, only when I eat to my full satisfaction does the fire in my stomach become satisfied. In this regard, you may remember when they were all in hiding, that they would go out and beg, and whatever they brought back in, Mother Kunti would take it and divide it in half. And herself and the four other Pandavas would eat that, and Bhima would get the other half. And still he was always crying about how hungry he was. She was a very intelligent mother. So he continues on. He says, I might possibly be able to fast only one day. So you please tell me, which Ekadasi is it that's worthy of my fasting that would include all the other Ekadasis? And I shall faithfully make every effort to observe that fast and hopefully become eligible for liberation. So Vyasadeva says to me, he says, oh king, of course he's a king. You have heard from me about the various kinds of occupational duties, such as elaborate Vedic ceremonies and pujas. In the Kali Yuga, however, no one can observe all these occupational, functional duties properly. I shall therefore tell you how, at practically no expense, one can endure some small austerity and achieve the greatest benefit and resultant happiness. Important here, at no expense, a small austerity. The essence of what is written in the Vedic literatures is known as the Puranas. And in it, it says that one should not eat on the dark or light fortnight Ekadasis. As stated in the Bhagavatam, it says that one should observe fully these Ekadasis. Observing it strictly is a great aid in developing one's devotional mood. Hearing Vyasadeva's words, the son of Vayu, Bhimasen, the strongest of all warriors, became frightened, began to shake like the leaf on a banyan tree in a strong wind. The frightened Bhimasen said, oh, grandfather, what should I do? I'm completely unable and ill-equipped to fast twice a month throughout the entire year. Please tell me what one fasting day will bestow the greatest benefit upon me. Vyasadeva, taking compassion, then replied, without drinking even water, you should fast on the Ekadasi that occurs during the light fortnight of the month of Jyeshtha, May and June, when the sun travels in the sign of Taurus and Gemini. According to learned personalities, on this day, one may bathe and perform ashram for purification. But while performing ashram, one may only drink the amount of water equal to a drop of gold, or that amount which it takes to immerse a mustard seed. Only this amount of water may be placed into the right palm, which should be held to form a cow's ear. If one drinks more water than this, despite the heat of the sun, one will be considered to have drunken wine. One must certainly not eat anything, for if he does, he breaks his fast. This rigid fast is in effect from sunrise on the Ekadasi day to sunrise on the Dwadasi day. I remember in the old days, we'd stay up with the Maha Puris and the Maha Sweet Rice waiting for midnight. Okay, new day. Of course, we were completely wrong. If a person endeavors to observe this fast very strictly, he easily achieves the result of observing all 24 other Ekadasi fasts throughout the year. Here's where it is. If you break any Ekadasis and you observe this one, you get a pass. On Dwadasi the following morning, the devotee should bathe. Then according to the prescribed rules, guidelines, and regulative injunctions, and of course depending on his ability, he should give gold and water to a worthy brahmana. Finally, he should cheerfully honor prasadam with a brahmana. So distributing gold and water according to one's means to a brahmana and then taking one's prasadam with a brahmana. O Bhimasen, one who can fast on this special Ekadasi in this manner reaps the benefits of having fasted on every Ekadasi during the year. There is no doubt of this, nor should there be any doubt of this. O Bhima, now hear the specific merit one gets by fasting on this Ekadasi. Lord Keshava, who holds a conch, disc, club, and lotus, personally has told me, everyone should take shelter of me and follow my instructions. Then he told me, the one who fasts on this Ekadasi without even drinking water or eating becomes free from all sinful reactions. And that one who observes this difficult nirjal fast on Jyeshtha Shukla Ekadasi truly reaps the benefit of all the other Ekadasis. Bhima Singh, in Kali Yuga, it is the age of quarrel and hypocrisy, when all the principles of the Vedas have been destroyed or greatly diminished, and when there is no proper charity or observance of ancient Vedic principles and ceremonies. So how will there be any means of purifying oneself? But there is the opportunity to fast on this Ekadasi and become free from all sins. Oh, son of Vayu, what more can I say to you? That statement's like, I've said it all, what more can I say? You should not eat on the Ekadasis that occur during the dark and light fortnights. And you should give up drinking water on Nirjal on this particularly auspicious day. O Vrikadhar, even though you are known as the voracious eater, if you fast on this Ekadasi, you receive the merits of bathing in all the holy places of pilgrimage, giving all kinds of charity to all kinds of worthy persons, and fasting on all the Ekadasis throughout the year, all in one go. Of this there should be no doubt. O tiger among men, whoever fasts on this Ekadasi truly becomes a great person and achieves all manner of opulence, wealth, gains, strength, and health. And at the fearful moment of death, the terrible Yamadutas, whose complexions are yellow and black and brandish huge maces and twirl mystic pasha ropes in the air for binding their victims, will refuse to approach such a person who follows this Nirjal Ekadasi. Rather, such a faithful soul will be taken to the abode of Lord Vishnu by the Vishnu Dutas, whose transcendental beautiful forms are clothed in gorgeous yellow garments, and who each hold the disc, club, conch, and lotus in their four hands, resembling Lord Vishnu. It is to gain all these benefits that one should certainly fast on this very auspicious and important Ekadasi, even from water. Vyasadeva goes on and on and continues to glorify it. Even if one is a dog eater, one will be freed from suffering in hell, and even if one has killed a Brahmin or has gambled drunken liquor or wine, on and on and on like this he speaks. And actually he talks about how to observe it as far as what one can and can't do. Mostly things that we won't find so practical in our current circumstances. But then here's the real question. What did Prabhupada say about this? Because that's what everybody's thinking. Yeah, but do I really have to do it? So Prabhupada was on a morning walk in 1976. Devotee said, on the calendar it is known as Bhishma Ekadasi. Prabhupada said, Bhishma Ekadasi? Yes, yes. Devotee says, so I've been told that if one fasts on Bhishma Ekadasi, it is the benefit of fasting on all the other Ekadasis. Prabhupada says, yes, Ekadasi is meant for fasting. Either Bhishma Ekadasi or Arjuna Ekadasi, it doesn't matter. Ekadasi means to fast. But if you have to eat, take a little fruits and milk. Otherwise, Ekadasi means fasting. So, second devotee says, if it is possible, then should we all go without eating? Prabhupada says, yes, but do not lie down and sleep all day. He knows our nature. Yes, you can fast, but just don't sleep all day. The third devotee says, eating Mahaprasadam is also fasting. Prabhupada says, who says that? The devotee says, oh, well, so-and-so Swami told me once. Yes, yes, he says that I have said that you have heard from him because you heard it from me. If there is service, Prabhupada says, and on your fasting that service would be stopped, then you can eat. First consideration is your service. If someone fasts and feels weak and cannot do their service, that is not good. Then they may take Mahaprasadam, yes, and continue rendering their service. So Prabhupada was very practical in these regards. If you can do it, fine. Fasting is very good. But if one's service is interrupted, if all one can do is lay and sleep all day, then there's no benefit to it. No real purpose. Prabhupada says further in another lecture, he says, simply on ekadasi, you take little fruits and milk. You can try to avoid that. You can try not to even take water. That is real ekadasi. But because you cannot do it, because it is the Kali Yuga time, therefore you're allowed to take a little fruit, little milk. These are the different methods of tapasya. So, a couple of other points on this consideration of fasting. One who is physically unable to fast on this ekadasi may read the glories of the ekadasi and recite the names of the ekadasis and thus achieve the same goal as one who observes the full ekadasi vrat. So if you're looking for a way out, a child, an old man, or a person unable to fast can take something to eat in the evening or once in the day, whether it be milk, fruit, or water, but should properly follow the ekadasi fast. One should not give up the fasting on ekadasi. So for us, fasting, of course, Lord Chaitanya was very known for this, that we should observe the fasting. This is the only requirement he made of his mother. And Prabhupada's explanation to us in very basic understanding is no grains, no beans, like that. Now, another indication is given. A person who is diseased, or a person who is dominated by bile, or a person who is aged more than 80 years, they are advised that they should not follow the fasting on ekadasi. So what can we do then if we're not going to do this fasting? Well, one very practical thing is to avoid all prajalpa, to fix ourselves. Because what is ekadasi? It's the day of hari. So it means we should engage more. So Bhakti Vinod gives 8 types of prajalpa to be avoided. Number 1, useless talks. Those things which are not about Lord Hari. Number 2, arguments. Unnecessary quarrels, even based on the Vedas and spiritual topics, are of no purpose. Gossip. Talking about other people for the purpose of establishing one's own reputation. Debates. Debates simply for the purpose of conquering. Fault-finding in others, simply for the purpose of imposing one's own bad habits on others. It's interesting the way Bhaktivinoda notes that. Speaking falsehoods. This is usually done for one's own self-interest. Blaspheming devotees. This will destroy one's devotional creeper. And worldly talks. Subjects that are devoid of God consciousness. So these 8 types of prajalpa, Bhaktivinoda recommends that one should always avoid, but particularly if we're looking for something that we can do very easily on this ekadasi, if we can't do nirjal, here are 8 particular items which are very useful to follow. So these principles tie in very directly with this verse of Dhritarashtra controlling his senses, withdrawing all the senses, beginning to wind the body's activities up, and with the importance of observing different types of vratas as we are able, as they're given to us on these different holy days. So we'll finish there. I want to thank everyone very much. Usually we take questions. As you can see from my attire, I am on my way to work. I was asked to fill in for the class today. So all glories to Pandava Nirjala Ekadasi. All glories to the Vaishnavas. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam. Hare Krishna.